Hello, welcome to Guides the Unknown. I'm Kristen.
I'm William.
And let's tell each other about some weird stuff. I have a haunting thing.
Oh.
I know you have a little bit of a grab bag of
sure,
weirdness.
A little glitz and glamour from Hollyweird.
Yeah, that's
what
right.
I've got coming up later in the show.
Quirky, did you come up with that?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought so.
That's all me.
I thought so. That had your name all over it.
Before we get started, I do just want to shout out that this is the launch week of a brand new podcast from Skylark Media, the same company that did my show Blackwood that I wrote.
Yep.
I'm one of the producers of Earthbreak, a few suggestions for survival with additional hints and tips about how to make yourself more comfortable during the alien apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
Starring Jenny Slate, directed by Aaron Katz, produced by April Lamb, written by Morgan Ormond. It's about Jenny Slate as the survivor of an alien apocalypse. She is the last woman on Earth. She is struggling to survive, and then record scratch.
What?
She learns something that raises the stakes considerably for herself. I do not want to give it away. You will know what I'm talking about at the end of episode one.
Yeah.
Two episodes are out right this second. Please go subscribe, check out those shows. I really hope you enjoy them.
Yeah, a lot of people are so far.
Yes, there are really amazing reviews.
It's insane.
On Apple Podcasts, a lot of amazing people have been tweeting about it at Earthbreak Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Yes.
A lot of really interesting opinions.
Almost all of the reviews are 5 stars.
Yes.
Like all of the written reviews.
Yes. There is, you know, I'm learning more and more about this industry.
Yeah.
We've been in it for about a year. Not everybody has favorable things to say.
Yeah, sure.
That's part of the way it goes. Mm-hmm. I'm shocked. Honestly, Earthbreak?
I know. It's really like across the board.
Yes.
There are no written reviews that aren't 5 stars.
Yeah.
And that aren't just like glowing.
Yeah. It's a very intense, very human, heartwarming, heartbreaking, frightening show. I've seen people who get scared. Careful
jumping.
If you're driving a car.
Yeah.
But yeah, go check out Earthbreak. I really, really hope you enjoy it.
Yeah.
And if you do, it means the world to productions like this, especially since you know people that have worked on it. Please consider sharing the show with your friends and reviewing it. Those things really, really matter.
Yeah.
It's the first show that I'm listed as a producer.
Right. That's a really big deal.
And I'm really, really proud of it. We've all worked so hard on it, and we all really hope that you enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. And Will wants to keep being a producer on
things. Hey, let me keep doing this.
He enjoyed the process.
Yeah.
So that kind of support helps him keep doing that.
Yeah, I was with it throughout the entire process. I've also got a story by on it.
Yeah, yeah.
I worked with Morgan on all the scripts, but she really, I mean, knocked it out of the park, blew it out of the water, smashed it out of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Earthbreak.
Yeah.
Go subscribe. Have a spooky good time.
That's right.
Okay.
All right.
Let's do this.
Cool. So, William, I'm going to go back to the paranormal witness well that I like to dip into here and there. It's been a while. I'm trying to think of the last story that I used paranormal witness specifically as my source for. I'm not sure. I think I may have just sprinkled it in here and there. But if you guys don't know what it is a now-canceled ghost show, big surprise, that you can find online. You can find it on... You can, like, rent it from YouTube and stuff like that. You can also, if you Google and you hit the videos tab, maybe there are some episodes on there.
Yeah.
May or may not be.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have to find out.
Gratis. So, I'm covering one that I remember watching a while ago, and then it kind of came back up when I was reading about the Warrens last week and all the freaky dolls that they have. They don't have this doll in the occult museum, but Lorraine Warren was called out to deal with this doll at their home.
Wow.
And this is the Susie doll.
Okay.
So, interesting about this story, I only found Paranormal Witness as a source for it. Like, if there are other sources, like when you Google, they seem to all be just citing the episode of Paranormal Witness. So I think this family only talked to the show about this.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find whether the doll... Well, I guess, actually, now I think about it, it's obviously not the same doll. It unfolds in the story. But... I was about to say, I couldn't find if the same doll that they use on the show is the actual doll, because I was wondering that before I watched the show, and I just remembered I have my answer, and you guys will too in a minute. But even though it's not the authentic Susie doll, I highly recommend you guys give a goog to Susie doll, because this thing is freaky in a different way. It's like, it's paper mache.
Oh.
And then it has like a very Jack Nicholson as the Joker red mouth. It is one lumpy, unnerving looking doll. They did the perfect thing for the show.
Who's making these dolls?
I know. Well, that part of the story is that this was a homemade doll. Like, the girl who ended up getting the doll got it from her aunt, who made it for her and made it to look like her. So for all I know, the doll was like made out of whatever the hell they made this doll out of. It seriously looks like its face is paper mache.
There must be a, still a trend of people that are making homemade dolls for their kids,
I'm
nieces,
sure.
nephews, whatever. I'm sure they look better nowadays, right?
I'm 100% certain that they do.
Did people in the past kind of suck at stuff?
Maybe they didn't have the same,
I guess we have
the same resources.
So such easier access to tools and information.
And it's all relative. Like, maybe Susie doll, they thought that thing was dynamite.
Yeah.
When they got it.
I think, whoa.
Yeah. Susie looks fantastic.
Whoa, did you make this or did you find it? Yeah. This is incredible. That's a compliment.
Yeah.
Did you make it or did you find it?
Because finding things is so, it's so organic that,
yeah, exactly.
You know, it's comparable and great.
Right.
I think this happened in the 80s. I actually didn't write that down. I'm pretty sure this happened in the 1980s.
So. Oh, that's more recent than I assumed. Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure. So what happened, and again, I'm just using this episode of Paranormal Witness as my source. What happened is that there was this family. There's a mother, a father, and two girls. And like I said, the aunt gave one of the six-year-old girls named Heather this Susie doll for her birthday, which was made in her likeness. And it reminded me of the fact that Robert the doll, which we talked about in an episode a while ago, was also kind of in the likeness of his owner. So, like, what's the deal? Maybe there's something about dolls that are like doppelgangers that somehow attracts untoward spirits.
That was a thing, right? It wasn't my buddy. It was, wasn't there a thing of getting dolls that look like you?
Well, there is, like, you can get American Girl dolls that you customize however you want now, and you've been able to do that for a while. So I wonder if you're thinking of that, or there's something that I'm just not thinking of.
This
like
is,
Build-A-Bear, kind of. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I guess so. Yeah.
But what were you going to say?
This is Lorgan von Pelt. She died in the potato famine. This is my doll. Didn't they all have horrific backstories?
Yes, usually.
So yeah, you can see that her shoes are made out of newspapers.
Right. I don't remember backstories, but like, yeah, it'd be like they're from like a war-torn Sweden or something like that. Yeah. I had Kirsten and I had Samantha. And Samantha is the doll who I also had the corresponding outfit for her.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
And there's a picture I have on my phone. I will post it, actually, where it's me standing as Samantha, and I only have, like, part of a smile on. I think that, like, the camera just clicked at, like, an off time. So I'm just kind of like, eh. And I had made myself a book strap out of, like, a rope or something. So I have that, like, around my shoulder. And my friend Mike made that black and white, and it truly makes me look like a Victorian ghost.
That's great. We're going to have
it's
to find that.
A very good picture.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, I'll definitely find that and post it. But yeah, there's something about dolls made in the likeness of the owner. That's very weird.
It's disconcerting.
I mean, there's inherently something weird about dolls anyway. It's like that whole uncanny valley thing.
Yeah.
But so Susie was supposed to be reminiscent of Heather. So the night that they got her, her parents were in bed. Her parents' names are Lisa and Jerry. And they were in bed and they heard this weird growling noise from outside. Now, Jerry has some quotes in here that are beautifully said. So I just quoted him directly because I was like, God, Jerry is a poet.
Yeah.
He might not even know it. But so they heard what they thought was an animal in trouble outside. And they went to the window. They lived in an apartment and kind of lived up on a higher floor. And Jerry got up and looked in the window, out the window too. And he said that the sound was like taking your voice and turning it inside out, just drawing it out.
What?
Jerry.
Yeah, that's very hard to imagine.
I know. Just like a wailing sound, basically.
Taking your voice and turning it inside out.
I know. I guess it just sounded like tortured and insane. So out the window, they look and they see a shadow, like a cloud, like a black cloud shadowy thing coming up the road. And Jerry said the streetlights were being cloaked in darkness one by one. They're just blinking out as it's moving. And that the sound was getting louder the closer it got. And he said hell was coming down that street.
Oh.
And then it was just gone. And they couldn't explain it. They didn't know what they saw. They didn't know what happened. And they just went to bed, I guess.
It sounds like the opening of Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
Somebody was using the put outer on all the lights on Lisa and Jerry's street.
Exactly. And for them, it was like a horror story.
Yeah,
it was just kindly old Albus Dumbledore.
Albus is like, shoop, Mischief Managed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Baron, they're like, yay. So the next morning, Heather brings Susie downstairs for breakfast, and they're in the living room watching TV while she eats her cereal. Heather walks out of the room to go get some more cereal, and she comes back, and Susie has moved to the rocking chair instead of on the couch where she was.
Yeah.
And Heather was so young. She was 6 years old. She said she thought it was real. She remembered thinking, like, oh, I guess Susie got up and, like, moved to the rocking chair. And that didn't scare her.
I know. It's almost, like, it's scary that kids wouldn't be scared by that.
Yeah, totally. They just don't have, like, the perfect grip on reality yet and disbelieve things like that. So they could be like, oh, okay.
I find that scary,
too. They have,
like,
imaginary friends.
Yeah.
It is scary. So she was super attached to the Susie doll. She took it with her everywhere. She talked to it like it was a real person all the time. And her sister, Lisa, right? Let me see. Yeah, mom's name is Linda. Sister's name is Lisa. Lisa said it was very creepy and they all didn't really like it. But, like, what are you going to do? So then one morning, the mom got up at 5:30 in the morning. She worked at a factory and she had to wake up super early. And she heard noises coming from downstairs. She went down and the kitchen was, like, trashed, like just drawers open, cabinets open, just stuff all over the place. And she thought it was the girls. She thought it was super weird because they don't do stuff like that, but, you know, the logical assumption was obviously there's people in your house.
Yeah.
So she went upstairs, she told Jerry, he took a look, and then they yelled at the girls, and the girls were, like, swearing it wasn't them, but they're just like, yeah, okay, but, like, don't do this, they're pissed. So then a little bit later that morning, because he went to work later than Linda did, Jerry is, like, still sleeping. I got ahead of myself. I'm sorry. It wasn't that he's waking from sleeping. Later that day, it was something Jerry heard. He's in the house and he hears static coming from downstairs, like TV static. And he goes down to the living room and the furniture, like living room furniture, like couches and stuff like that. And they show it in the show, is stacked in weird ways. Like the couch is, like, up on its side, like chairs are on tables, like things are just, like, all messed up. And Heather, the girl, and Susie are sitting in the rocking chair in front of the staticky TV. And Heather just looks like she's totally absorbed in it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Poltergeist, like the movie Poltergeist, yeah, in this story. And I couldn't find, because Paranormal Witness is the only source for this story, any sort of chicken or the egg kind of situation.
Yeah.
Like, maybe this was maybe inspired by the movie Poltergeist, or maybe this is such common Poltergeist activity. Like, maybe that kind of, like, furniture arranging, and maybe the static happens with poltergeisty stuff a lot or something.
Maybe.
But definite parallels.
I think it's notable to point out that, you know, this is a story about a spooky doll.
Mm-hmm.
And what is a doll but another object for a poltergeist to move around?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think, as well be that scary clown thing from underneath the bed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think, isn't there a thing in, I haven't seen the movies, but I think in Annabelle, part of the point isn't that the doll Annabelle is getting up and running around and doing stuff.
Yeah.
It's that there's a spirit that is attached to Annabelle and is manipulating the doll similar to how it would manipulate other stuff. So
yeah,
the doll could just be, like, the focal point of the story. And again, this is about
a young girl
yes, again.
And her sister. The girl is six, so she's really young, but her sister was, like, a teenager.
Okay.
So
yeah, we're referring to the rules of poltergeists, yes, which we talked about a long, long, long time ago. We covered poltergeists, and a big thing was about it being around, like, puberty-aged kids. Like,
right,
a lot of tension around children would attract a poltergeist. This
is, they're, like, hormones to feed off of.
Exactly.
Basically.
So, yeah, this is somewhat in keeping with that rule set.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know if that thing about the spirits, like, not necessarily it being a doll that is inhabited, but a spirit just kind of using that as its tool to freak people out. I don't know if it might be. I haven't seen Annabelle either. But it definitely is part of the real Annabelle story. I talked about it on the show.
Right. Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you're definitely on to something.
Yeah, because I remember, like, having almost exactly this conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same.
It's pretty similar. So he sees, you know, all the furniture, like heavy furniture, stacked and rearranged, and his daughter sitting with her doll in front of just a static TV, just, like, looking totally absorbed in it.
Yeah.
Blah. So he, like, rips her away from it, and she's like, what the hell? So he thinks that maybe at this point somebody is breaking in and messing with them. So they change the locks in their apartment. Then another time, in the middle of the night, Heather and Lisa, her older sister, is like a teenager, hear the sound of kids playing outside, like in the middle of the night. It sounds like it's like the middle of the day, basically. And so they go to look in the window, out the window, and they don't see anyone outside, but they can still hear the sound of kids playing.
Hmm.
Like, what the hell? It's just not really normal. So then Lisa, they go back to bed because what are you going to do? I guess maybe they don't say this in the show, but maybe they're like, oh, maybe they're down the street or something. I guess you just wouldn't know what to do. They lay down, and Lisa said when she laid down, she heard kind of an indistinct whisper in her ear and then a chill down her neck. And she was just like, what the hell is going on? Like, just confused, and just tried to go to sleep, and she, like, couldn't wait for morning to come. Yeah. I think she said she didn't want to wake up her mom because her mom works so early or something. And she was like, oh, I just want this to be over. So then when they woke up in the morning, Lisa feels, like, hair on her face, just, like, you know, the middle of the night stuff. And she, like, goes like this, and there, it's a bunch of her hair. And it turns out there is, like, a perfect circle bald spot in the back of her head.
Oh.
That she didn't feel or anything. Like, nothing hurt her.
I can't feel my bald spot. So.
Yeah, so I don't know what she's making such a big deal out of.
Although I will say, sometimes I can tell it's raining. Because
that
I can,
makes sense.
Yeah,
yeah.
The raindrops hit my bald spot, and then I know.
Well, it's just like you have a little a weather vane up there.
Yeah,
that's all. You, it's like a, it's, hey buddy, it's like a special superpower.
Yeah, it's great.
Look at you. You know when it's raining.
Yeah. Hey, Professor Xavier, you want to know what my superpower is? It's the back top of my head's a little cold.
I don't know if they're going to ask you to join the team. I have to tell you. They already got a bald guy.
I can't fit in this suit.
Professor Xavier's already bald. They don't need you.
I already know that's, it's raining.
That's wonderful, son, but we already have one.
I can tell it's raining all around my head.
All of it. Face, back of head, and all. Does he even have eyebrows?
He might not.
I'm trying to picture it. Now, Patrick Stewart has eyebrows in that, I think. Should have killed me when you had the chance.
Oh man.
God. How many times do you think I've said that in the last
times? Kristen and I before at the hotel in New York, we saw part of X-Men 3, yeah. And it was psychotic. It was
a crazy movie. It had been, like, kind of in the periphery of my mind for, like, months, ever since, like, Howard Stern was talking about the old movies or something. And yeah. I said to Ryan, like, oh, I want to watch, like, the old X-Men. And I've been thinking about it and just kind of forgetting it. And we watched that. I was like, oh, boy, I got to get back into this world.
It's like all Hugh Jackman raising one eyebrow.
Hugh Jackman's insane. And then they go into, like, a simulation for fighting training. Yeah. And Hugh Jackman is able to light his cigar off of, like, a burning car.
It doesn't make a lick of sense. It's insane. And then Kelsey Grammer is Beast, and he's reading a newspaper sitting on the ceiling.
A dream.
And he drops from the ceiling and does like a little heel click, like, it's nice to see you, Senator.
A dream.
Speaking of Frasier, there's a lot going on with Frasier recently.
I know.
Frasier is an earthbreak.
Yeah. I've been writing, I was looking for Frasier gifts today to try to post with something with Earthbreak. Yeah, Frasier was really...
There was a major Frasier moment in Earthbreak.
Really,
and it,
top
there was
of mind.
Flat out, damn near an argument between Jenny Slate and Morgan Orman at the Tribeca premiere about Frasier in the panel. It was great.
Frasier is trending.
Yeah, Frasier is trending
in our
again.
World.
Yeah.
So she has this like circular bald patch in the back of her head that she didn't do or anything. It seemed to appear there. So they took her to a specialist because they thought that her hair must have fallen out just in that spot. So maybe they thought she had something kind of going on with her medically. And they had to like do a test or something like that. But they called them back and told them that it didn't just organically fall out of her head. It was yanked out altogether. And she knew she hadn't done it. Nobody in her family had done it. She literally didn't feel it happen, which seems extremely unlikely because at least in the show, it's a recreation, so who knows? But it was like a decent size. Like we're talking a donut. Maybe a smaller Entenmann's, but still a donut. Like a softie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So someone was pulling it out.
Uh-huh.
Then... One night they're all having dinner and Heather says, bad things are going to happen in this house.
Oh.
Out of nowhere.
This has to predate Poltergeist or I know.
They're here.
It's the same.
I know.
That's crazy.
Yes. And they said that it was insanely creepy and just matter of fact, loud and clear. And Lisa described it like there was a tape recorder under her chair. It just like sounded like her, but like not totally like her.
That's weird.
And just very strange. And she said that they said that she was just acting not like herself, Heather, and that she had Susie with her like all the time. Like she'd been with her a lot before that, but now is constant Susie doll. Susie doll out the wazoozy doll. So this one is, oh boy. So one day, Lisa wanted to go skating, the older girl, and she and Heather shared a room in the apartment. And she went to their room to get her skates, like roller skates or rollerblades or something. And she saw Susie in there. Maybe Heather was at school or something. And she didn't really want to go in the room with Susie because they're just creeped out by Susie by this point. It seems like they hadn't made the full connection that Susie was behind all the scary stuff, but not feeling Susie. So she called her mom and was like, hey, mom, can you help me find the roller skates? Like, just so her mom would go in there with her. And then turns around, and her mom started to come, and turns around, and the Susie doll isn't in there anymore. And they're like, what the hell? Then they hear water running from the bathroom down the hall. Go into the bathroom. I recommend watching this Paranormal Witness episode just for this, or I think there's even a still of this on Google. They open the bathroom door, the water is running, and Susie is sitting on the john, pants down, just looking over at them.
Shut up.
No.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
Mocking them. Just being lewd.
Sitting there bold as brass.
Yeah, yep. Happy as you please. So this demon or whatever is messing with the Susie doll and using as a vessel is just being crude at this point.
I don't, yeah, that's just juvenile.
Exactly.
I don't understand why this would demons be insulting.
Like, demons like, you know, gross scatological humor and things
cocky
like
duty.
That. Cocky duty.
You're right.
They do. They like saying gross stuff.
No, you're right.
Yeah.
There's a whole thing. We read The Exorcist for our old podcast, Book Club, Schmuck Club, and that the book, way more than the movie, is about like bodily fluids and what can happen to you and the crudity of humans as an animal.
Right.
Like demons like to make fun of humans because we are like flesh and blood.
Fun that you
and,
like do stuff like poop.
Yeah, we are
or
gross.
Like excrete. Yeah,
humans
yeah.
are disgusting. Mm-hmm. And so it's to point out how grotesque we are.
Right, so it's like a mockery.
Which is frightening. That really is like an otherworldly screwed up thing.
Yeah, can you imagine? Well, if that, I would... I mean, if any of this stuff happened, I would die. Yeah, but the doll sitting on the toilet with its pants down?
That is a really insane...
The image is very... It's laughable, but also very scary.
Is it scary looking?
Yeah, I think so.
So you're telling me if I Google Susie doll toilet... Well,
you might be able to. Try just Googling Susie doll,
How are we spelling Susie?
S-U-Z-Y.
Susie doll toilet. Should I spell toilet right or T-E-R-L-E-T?
I think have a little fun with it.
Okay. Susie doll toilet.
Did
I'm
it?
Looking at it.
Okay.
Wait, is there also a movie?
No. When you get... Yep.
This is right?
Yep.
Ooh.
I told you. There are other... Like, you find a lot of dolls that are for sale named Susie when you Google this, but look for the one that looks like a horrifying ghost doll from a paranormal show. So it has, like, a green wash over it.
It's so unpleasant.
Right?
It's so unpleasant.
It's
forgot...
It's a freaky-looking doll, too, right?
I forgot that you had said that. It's like faces paper mache.
Yeah.
It's really uncomfortable looking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the way that it's smiling at the camera.
No.
It's really freaky.
Yes.
A lot of people after you covered the dolls, I think, shared this like storefront. I don't know. I don't have enough of the details, but there's like a mannequin wearing a wedding dress.
I think it's called La Pasqualita, and I'll definitely look into it another time.
We'll go into it further, but sort of there's this idea of like maybe it's more than a mannequin.
Mm-hmm.
The face is very real looking.
Yeah.
Could it not be a corpse covered in plaster?
Right.
I have a very similar vibe looking at the Susie doll's face.
Well, yeah.
Not that it looks real, not that like the proportions are real.
Yeah.
But there's a very sort of mortician's makeup vibe to it. There's this like pancake makeup.
Yeah, that's a very good way to put it. Yeah.
It's really uncomfortable looking.
It really is. And I've said it before, like there are a lot of like ghost and paranormal shows that I like in a somewhat ironic way because they're like kind of cheesy or whatever. Paranormal Witness is so genuinely well done. It's like, I wish I could remember the exact episode, but I remember there was an episode that I watched by myself, and I remember thinking, I wish I wasn't by myself right now.
Really?
It's actually really, really well done and freaky.
I love and hate that feeling.
Yeah, same.
I'm going to ask you a really weird question real quick.
Sure.
Susie doll.
Mm-hmm.
Does she look at all to you like...
Yes!
This leather-faced woman mask?
Like, to the degree that now I'm wondering if they made it out of that.
Yeah. I don't remember which movie it is where Leatherface wears, like, pretty ladies makeup.
Yeah.
It's like 3 or 4, I want to say. But it's very, very shockingly similar.
It's very similar.
to Susie Dahl.
Yeah.
I'll make a side-by-side we can post.
Yeah,
something.
Totally.
Also kind of Zeke the Plumber.
Oh, yeah, there is a Zeke. I think Zeke the Plumber is closer to the lady Leatherface than Susie,
though,
yeah,
I guess,
right?
It's more of a baby step too far
away.
Yeah,
but they're all part of the same family.
Really freaky.
A family I would like to avoid.
Yes. I'm not going to that reunion.
No. No, thank you. So here's the time where the dam starts to really break, and it starts to involve the parents being like, okay, something, frankly, I don't know why the toilet thing didn't make this happen, but like, okay, something is up and it's mm-hmm. paranormal and out of our control. So this is what I was starting to say before. The dad was sleeping. I think he was sleeping later than the mom because she had work and everything. And this can't be right. He was sleeping. He says nobody else was home. It doesn't matter. He was sleeping and he heard noises coming from downstairs. And even though he hadn't come around to the idea this was like definitely a ghost or anything, he said that he got a sick, scared feeling. Just like, nothing good has been coming of us hearing noises from downstairs lately. Yeah. Like, what's the deal going to be? So he goes down, and again, the kitchen is like totally trashed. But this time, the kitchen chairs are up on the table, but with just the front legs on, and the back legs are just hanging off, and yet they're floating like weird. It's normal, basically. And he said that he was looking at it, and he just couldn't even believe it, because it's obviously against gravity. Those back legs aren't resting on anything, and yet it looks like they are. And so he went over to them, and when he took them to move them, there was no resistance, just normal, just taking it and putting it down. And he said, until this happened, I was a true non-believer of this hocus-pocus crap, and I got proven wrong.
Wow.
So he picks up his wife from work that day, and he told her about it, but she was still a little bit skeptical because she hadn't seen this happen herself. Again, she did see Susie on the John with her pants down.
Yeah.
So I still don't know where the skepticism comes from, but whatever. But she herself became a believer in this the next day. So she was at home by herself cleaning up, and Susie was on the couch. And to clean the couch and stuff around it, she put Susie on the rocking chair. So she said she was like just hanging out, took a break or something, and sat down in the kitchen to have lunch. And she heard something, and she turned, and there was a marble bouncing down the stairs. And she was just like, you know, what? Kind of taking it in. And then another marble came down the stairs, and she knew nobody was home. So she was like, oh my God, there's an intruder in here. So she went upstairs to go check everything out, and she was super scared to do it, but there was nobody up there. She looked in all the rooms and closets and everything. And she walks back down the stairs, and the marbles were sitting together in the middle of the floor in the living room, like somebody had placed them there. Like, it's not like they just like bounced down the stairs and hit somewhere. They're just like side by side. And the Susie doll isn't in the rocking chair anymore where she had put her. She then turns and looks another direction, and the laundry that she had been doing and folding is thrown all over the room, yeah. Like the other room or something. So she realized it wasn't the kids who did this. Like, there really is something up. What the hell? So they said they couldn't move when all this was happening because they were financially strapped. So they didn't really know what to do. And there was kind of like dealing with it until one day, Jerry was thrown from the bed onto the wall, and he felt a ton of pain in his arm, and he looked, and there were like scratch marks, like claw marks down his arm.
Whoa.
Then he said that he was on the ground, and they had a four-poster bed, and the top little spindly things came off of the four-poster bed. Like, I can't remember exactly how he phrased it.
Yeah. Picture them like little throwing daggers.
Yes, that's what I wrote. I said that they were thrown like stakes.
Yeah.
He said they levitated, they turned to point at him, and then shoop.
Whoa.
So they were like, all right, this is too serious now. It's like getting very physical.
Yeah.
So they called their reverend, who suggested they get in touch with Lorraine Warren. And they knew her name from TV. They had heard of her before. So Lorraine came, and she said that she could feel something in the apartment, that something was up. And she came at night, and Heather was asleep. So they let Heather be. But the parents and Lisa came into the kitchen, and they all held hands around the table with Lorraine, because that's what they asked her to do. Or that's what she asked them to do. So they're doing that, and they feel this like wind kind of start like ripping around the circle, and they start hearing Heather shouting from their room, and she is shouting, get the F out of here, like over and over, and that her voice sounded older. She didn't like totally sound like herself.
Ooh.
I know, isn't it weird? I have the same reaction. Like, not just like her voice wasn't hers. It's creepy that it sounded like her voice, but an older version of herself.
That gave me a chill. It's hard to put a finger on what that could possibly mean.
I guess it's like
it's Stephen
a
King.
Little closer to reality, so it makes it a little bit scarier.
It's grounded still.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, they run in there and they're like, oh, God, what the hell? And they ask Lorraine if Heather was possessed, and Lorraine said, not yet. There was still time. So I guess meaning like fully gone over or something. And current day Heather, because in this show they have reenactments, but then they talk to the people, do talking heads with the people who experienced it. Current day Heather said she doesn't remember this night at all. She doesn't remember anything bad about it or anything. And Lorraine says that they need an exorcist. And they ended up going with this guy named Father McKenna. I don't know how they ended up on Father McKenna and not like Ed Warren. I don't know what the deal is. Maybe they were too expensive. Maybe they like had some sort of personal history with Father McKenna or something. I'm not sure. But I was surprised because Ed Warren is an exorcist.
Right.
But it's not Ed Warren who does this. So Father McKenna and his like assistant priest come over. And this is very cool. I feel like this would be a very good movie thing. So they set up rows of chairs in the room facing him, like almost like pews or something. And he told them, whatever happens, keep looking forward. Don't ever look back during this whole thing. Just like keep looking at me, which I really, really liked. Heather was acting normal that day. Like she wasn't like acting funky and she didn't feel anything weird. But she said that she was just kind of scared and she knew this was kind of about her and she just didn't know it was going to happen. So less than a minute into the prayers he was saying, the light started flickering and it sounded like there were scratches on the walls. You could hear this kind of like scratchy sound. Then they started to hear a growling noise, kind of the same growling sound that they had heard just Lisa and Jerry together that one night when they saw that like kind of cloud moving toward them. They said it sounded like it was moving from far away in the house, like in the bedroom and getting closer, like kind of like coming down the hallway and coming down the stairs. The windows were closed. There was wind blowing everywhere. They said the curtains were blowing and stuff. And classically, a wooden crucifix on the wall turned upside down. So, again, with the mom, like, coming to things later than makes sense to me. Because now, again, Susie's done a couple things, right?
This is more than a cold.
Yeah, right? Like,
I don't think she has the flu at all.
Yeah. The mom said she saw Susie doll during this just rocking away in the chair and then she felt like she knew it was her. What? But okay. So
it's kind of awesome. It's kind of awesome
so
to have somebody that
Susie taking a dump. Then Susie like threw marbles down your hallway, tossed a bunch of your laundry and disappeared. Now you see Susie rocking in a chair and you're like, oh my God.
It would have been awesome if it was like,
doll.
Where is Susie? Where is she?
Yeah.
The bathroom door is locked.
Yeah. Susie.
And then you hear, occupied. Yeah. I'm in here. Occupado. Yeah. I'll be out in a minute. Whoa.
I think there's something wrong with Susie. What? Did she have the beans? The beans.
She had the beans.
So
why do we always find ourselves?
I don't know. Even when I was watching this, I was like, I totally forgot she's on a toilet during
a
this.
Toilet again?
It's the law of attraction.
It's insane.
It is insane. I was happy though.
Of course.
I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, what the hell?
It's wonderful.
Why had Mrs. Stray picked a doll taking a fake crap in it? Like, with its pants down. I couldn't believe my luck. So she's rocking away. Linda's like, you know what? I think there's something wrong with this doll. And the priest tells them all to go outside now. He's going to finish and they should just get away. So they go outside and they pray. And then even from downstairs, they hear the sound from upstairs. I assume kind of like maybe the growling and the wind sort of whipping. They hear it get quiet. So then the priest comes downstairs and he says, it's all good. I took care of it. Everything's going to be okay now. And they're like, okay, thank God. So they go upstairs. When they walk in, Linda hears the rocking chair still going with Susie. And now Linda has had it. So she grabs Susie and she throws Susie in the dumpster. And she's like, this doll is the problem and I'm getting rid of it. And Heather was very upset, but was just like, oh, well, basically. Yeah. So basically they said that like later that week that Linda kept watching for the garbage truck and she saw it come by, take the stuff from the dumpster and then drive away. So then she knew that Susie was gone. She was kind of like had some peace with it. Heather never had another doll again. Just really put her off dolls. And the show ended on a fun, like kind of like fictional note. Is a good way to kind of sew it up. Linda says that she often wonders where Susie is now. And then it showed This is amazing. It shows the garbage truck going or whatever, and like the rear view mirror of the garbage truck has like Susie in frame, and then Susie like slides out of frame.
What?
Yep. And then they show Susie on a curb, like she like felt like she like threw herself out of the garbage truck or something, and a little girl picks her up and is like,
ew. Smells like waste.
So,
mommy, I found a doll in the gutter.
Yeah,
can you help me throw it away? It smells like
also
garbage.
With that papery face. It's very porous. You know.
Yeah, exactly. It's sopping up a lot of juices.
Ew! It's not gonna clean out.
No, it's not.
It's not gonna lift.
That sucker's not gonna get clean.
No.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
So that is it. That is the story of the Susie doll.
That is a hell of a story.
I know. I really recommend watching it. I basically told you everything from the show, but still watching the doll is pretty great.
Sure.
Especially that toilet scene.
I flat out wonder, I know Annabelle 3 is happening and that the Warrens are in it.
Mm-hmm.
This seems like they could adapt it. It's very cinematic.
I know. I'm actually very surprised that they haven't. Yeah. I mean, part of why I wonder is that it's seriously, I don't think that the Warrens ever, not that I found.
You just rewrite it. It's a story now. You know,
oh, totally.
You,
but
you
I just
twist
wonder,
reality.
Yeah. I just wonder if it hasn't been done because it's not in like the Warrens book, The Demonologists or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't seem like they talked about it a lot or anything, if at all. So I wonder if it's not part of like the Warren source material.
Yeah, maybe.
In a big way that is noticeable.
Yeah.
But it would totally work.
Yeah, I really think it would.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, hey. I don't know if I've mentioned this.
Mm-hmm.
I produced a show called Earthbreak.
Yeah. Have you heard?
Have you heard this, ladies and gentlemen? I know. Yeah. I'm sorry. This will be the last time.
Yeah.
Jenny Slate is the last woman on Earth. It's a scary show,
yep.
Right? Jenny Slate is many things. She's an actress entirely.
Yeah.
She's a writer.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that people primarily know about her is that she is a comedian.
Right.
She's a stand-up. She was on SNL. Mm-hmm. She wrote Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. She does primarily comedy. Mona Lisa Saperstein on Parks and Rec.
That's right.
And it got me thinking, I'm a big fan of horror. I'm also a giant fan of comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always loved seeing when comedians get into horror roles.
Yeah, it's always fun.
Or those obscure roles where some big, you know, modern comedian, actually, did you realize that so-and-so started out in part 9 of Hellraiser? Whatever the hell.
Yeah.
So I figured we'd take a look at some scary comedians throughout history.
Perfect.
And we'll start in the modern era where this is a completely sort of revered genre switch for comedians to do.
Yeah.
In this day and age.
It's a golden age of this.
Absolutely. Yeah. Jordan Peele, I think, is really who you can point to as waving the flag for transitioning from comedy to horror.
Yeah.
Obviously, as the director of not only Get Out, but recently Us, Jordan Peele has really proven that some of the same storylines that might work for comedy work really well in horror.
Yeah.
And that people who are... They say comedy is harder than tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Jordan Peele is proving that people who have become adept at the horribly intense world of comedy can transition easily into other
genres. Yeah, these shops that are applicable to other things.
Exactly. Yeah. So not only Get Out and Us, Jordan Peele is now one of the creators of the new Twilight Zone.
Right. Do you also know, I haven't watched it, it sounds like this was maybe like a prelude to the Twilight Zone. He is a producer. Maybe he's not the producer, and I'm not a great news source, so I can't remember all the details. But there's a show that's a YouTube original, like exclusive show called Weird City that he's a producer on that sounds kind of Twilight Zone-esque. And like Michael Cera is in it.
Oh, really?
And I can't remember who else. And I think it's an anthology thing, but it all takes place in this city that's like weird.
Oh, that's interesting.
I mean, that's the name. But like it's kind of like a... sci-fi horror like weird thing, but I think lighthearted.
I did not know that.
I know, and I know it until recently.
That's especially interesting if Michael Cera's in that, because the modern Twilight Zone seems to be about giving a lot of comedic performers an opportunity to work in sort of like noir spooky stories and stuff.
Yeah.
Episode 1 of the Twilight Zone had comedian Kumail Nanjiani, who I'm a major fan of.
Same.
I think his stand-up is insanely funny.
I know. I think we talked about it on the show. His stand-up Beta Male is one of the only stand-up things that has made me like really, truly like laugh out loud. I love Kumail Nanjiani.
I think we've seen it
I think Allie and I have watched it like 4 times.
It's so funny.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
It has a whole thing about like being haunted by a woman with a goat face.
Yeah.
And how inconvenient it is.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, she's vomiting blood all over the carpet. And as soon as you get somebody in to come take a look, she disappears. And now you look nuts.
And he lives in a house full of nerds. And like somebody has to be like the one to step up and fight it. But like none of them are like really up for the challenge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's also got another bit about how he would be the person in the horror movie that would die first.
Yeah.
He's the way that you know that there's really a problem.
Right, yeah.
So for him, the movie Alien, a cat goes missing and then someone goes looking for it, gets eaten by the alien. Now everyone knows there's an alien.
Yeah.
If that was Kumail Nanjiani's life, his world would be, well, the cat's missing.
Yeah.
And that's all he'd ever find out.
Right, right.
A few minutes later, Alien for him would end in 10 minutes. Now, not only Kumail Nanjiani, the trailer, I have not watched beyond that first episode, but I've seen the trailer where they're like, I think Seth Rogen is going to be in one of them.
Yeah.
It seems like Jordan Peele is deliberately.
Yeah, I think it has to be. Adam Scott is in one of them.
Did you say Adam Scott?
Yes. Yeah, anything else horror related?
Kristen, it's so funny that you bring up Adam Scott.
Oh my God. Tell me why. Like, I don't know.
Adam Scott was in Hellraiser Bloodline.
Yeah.
This is the fourth Hellraiser movie. So here's the tone I'm going to set. And this is what we're going to do with different comedic based performers. I'm going to tell you the role they played.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to read you some of their lines.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you about a notable moment from their character in the movie.
Perfect.
So Hellraiser 4, the premise is that in the 22nd century, a scientist attempts to right the wrong his ancestor created, a puzzle box that opens the gates of hell and unleashes Pinhead and his Cenobite legions.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the tagline for this movie.
Signed picture of Pinhead given to me by my friend Meg.
That's right. Doug Bradley's right there.
Yep.
He's always watching us.
Always.
The tagline for Hellraiser Bloodline is, this year, the past, the present, and the future will all meet at the crossroads of hell.
Wow.
And the movie
stars.
It's gonna
be real busy in hell, right?
The movie is super busy.
That's a lot.
Adam Scott is featured in the movie in the role of Jacques.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Assistant to Philippe Lamarchand.
Oh, my God.
Creator of the Lament configuration. There's a lot of French involved in my topic this week.
Huh.
Yeah. Here's a notable quote.
We always do well with French, so.
Yeah, exactly. I'm very excited for it.
Yeah.
Here's a notable quote from Adam Scott in Hellraiser Bloodline. Angelique, let's make this clear. What you want is irrelevant.
Oh, my God.
It's about what I want. After 200 years, you should know what those things are.
That sounds great.
Followed soon after, within like 2 minutes, he goes, what the hell are you talking about? There's a lot in between those two moments, but it's funny to start with like ambiguity. Angelique, let me make this clear, too. What the hell are you talking about?
Very blunt.
It's a wonderful twist. Notable moment. I've not seen this movie, by the way. I watched a clip on YouTube and read the Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Spoilers, by the way, for Hellraiser Bloodline.
Yeah.
Assume every time I say a movie name from here on out, I'm going to spoil it. Never in a way that's truly going to ruin the entire plot.
Yeah.
But you're just going to hear stuff about the movie. I think it'll be in the spirit of fun. And quite frankly, you can then go watch these movies and have a very Guide to the Unknown experience when the certain moments I talk about happen. And you can go like, oh yeah, Will and Kristen talk
about
that.
Right, it'll be fun.
So here's the notable moment. This is his standout scene.
Yeah.
Jacques summons a demon.
What's his look like?
Oh, his look is intense.
Yeah.
He looks even more like Tom Cruise than I thought he did.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got a ponytail.
Okay.
He's got a long ponytail, and it's pulled back in a ponytail. That's what it is.
Yeah.
But there's like a string of hair.
Oh, wow.
And I think he's wearing like a fancy white suit.
Yeah.
He's supposed to look like a playboy rich guy.
That's awesome.
Who gets his way.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That reminds me real quick. This was, well, it's not that weird. I think it was just me reading into it. Okay. Ryan and I went to see that movie, The Long Shot, the other day. That like romantic comedy with Charlize Theron and Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
It was great. And there was this guy in the parking lot who was wearing like, he was wearing like Seth Rogen's outfit in the movie. He was like outside smoking a cigarette and he's wearing like a windbreaker kind of like that and a hat. And Ryan and I, we pulled up and we were like, what's with that guy? He's just like kind of a loud look. And I was like, he looks like Julia Louis-Dreyfus's husband in Christmas Vacation, like when they're coming in from like running and stuff like that. And then when we went and we watched the movie, I like nudged him. I was like, was that guy in the parking lot just dressed like Seth Rogen in this movie? What is happening? And it reminded me of when I went to the movies and there was somebody cosplaying as Tommy Wiseau when I went to see the Disaster Artist like in the middle of the day on a Monday with like no one else in the theater.
That's so weird.
I know. He was definitely going to... Like, he was going to film, like, a creative short or something in there.
Right. Yeah.
Why was I talking about that? Oh, I guess because it made me think of that guy.
Insane costume,
an insane costume, and it made me think of the guy from Christmas Vacation, who, it sounds like, also dresses a little bit like Adam Scott right now.
I don't know, Margo.
Yeah. Sounds like that kind of dude.
Yeah. Well, now let's move to one of the big guns. I've got several big guns in here. I'm going to get one right out of the way right here and now.
Yeah.
Robin Williams.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what movies I'm going to talk about?
So good at doing this. Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah. I haven't seen, I'm trying to think, at least two of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
1 hour photo.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
He plays, but the premise is Robin Williams works at the 1 hour photo mat. He's going to develop your photos in an hour.
Right.
And he becomes obsessed with a couple whose photos he develops.
Yeah.
His role is Seymour Parrish. Here are some taglines for the movie.
Okay.
The things that we fear the most have already happened to us.
Hmm. That's a weird tagline,
it's
right?
It's very weird. I think it's a line he says in the movie.
Okay.
And he's a weird dude, so it's not, yeah. He knows your secrets.
Okay.
There's nothing more dangerous than a familiar face.
Hmm.
And he knows where you live. Which is so, like... blunt and to the point.
It's a really bland tagline.
Very bland. Standout line.
Yeah.
I think it's telling that this is like one of the most interesting lines that I've got.
Uh-huh.
According to the Oxford English Dictionary, the word snapshot was originally a hunting term.
Oh.
In the context of somebody who's stalking people based on their photographs.
That's cool.
Pretty great.
Yeah.
Standout moment, I just wrote, no thanks, very upsetting movie.
Yeah, it sounds devastating.
It's... everything. I think I saw it once. I think I rented the DVD.
Yeah.
I just sat there with my mouth open like, oh my God.
I think I politely declined.
Yeah.
It just seemed really like a bummer.
No bueno.
Yeah.
Muy mal.
Yeah.
All right. Insomnia.
Yep.
By the way, same year, 2002, he did 1 hour photo and Insomnia.
So weird.
Where he plays Walter Finch.
Mm-hmm.
Premise is that Al Pacino is a detective. He flies up to Alaska to try to solve a murder. He's there during that period of time where the sun never sets.
Right.
It's an eternal day, and it's a very psychological story. A lot of mixed up motivations. You don't know who to trust. You don't even know if Al Pacino, Detective Pacino, you don't even know if he's a good guy.
Yeah.
The taglines, days never end. Nightmares are real. No one is innocent.
Okay.
And don't close your eyes. And a tough cop, a brilliant killer, an unspeakable crime.
Okay, that one's good. Even the first one, those seem like not sentences that belong together.
No. Days never end, nightmares are real, no one is innocent.
What?
Huh? What?
They seem like one sentence of other taglines that got mixed up.
Here's Robin Williams' standout line as Walter Finch.
It's a good name.
She started laughing at me.
Uh-oh.
She didn't stop laughing.
He didn't like that, did he?
Did you ever have someone laugh at you, Will? You know, when you're really vulnerable, laugh their ass off at you. Someone you thought respected you. Ever have that happen, Will?
Oh, God.
I just wanted to stop her laughing, that's all.
Oh, God.
Standout moment.
I don't like it when Ron Williams is upset.
No, neither do I. He secretly records Al Pacino. It turns out that they have a bit of a an odd relationship to each other.
Uh-huh.
How heavy should I get into spoilers? I feel like it's not interesting to try to be guarded about it.
Yeah, I would say I think it's fine. I think exactly right. It'll be annoying.
It's just going to be annoying to be dancing around this stuff?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, the spoilers are going to be significant from here
on out.
They're
hot and heavy.
I told you before that I wasn't going to be spoiling major stuff. I realize it's boring not to.
Yeah, yeah.
Spoilers for Insomnia start now. So Al Pacino is there to catch the guy that killed this woman.
Uh-huh.
And there's a shootout. And Al Pacino ends up accidentally shooting his own partner.
Oh, okay.
And killing him.
Ooch.
And then he swaps the bullet to make it look like Robin Williams did it.
Okay.
And Robin Williams saw him do it.
Oh.
So he's basically like, you're going to fudge the facts so that I can get away with murdering that lady.
Uh-huh.
And
I see.
In exchange, you know, I won't tell everybody that he killed your partner.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Al Pacino's like,
Say hello to my chocolate blend. And he's like, all right, yeah, but no one can know.
Uh-huh.
And like, you basically are like, well, Al Pacino's just going to murder Robin Williams, right? And then Robin Williams gets on a ferry to like leave the conversation, whatever, and pulls a tape recorder out of his pocket. He was recording Pacini.
Okay.
So Pacino better not double cross him.
Yeah, yeah.
Is basically the point.
Okay.
Very clever.
That is clever.
But Robin Williams was in another thing.
Yeah.
He was in Law and Order Special Victims Unit, the 200th episode titled Authority.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Somebody is masquerading as a police officer, calling places, and essentially the whole gimmick is, I'm an authority figure, therefore you will do whatever I say. So he's convincing people to like assault their employees. It's based on a real story that happened in real life.
That real story
is horrifying.
There's a movie about that story. I do not recommend it, but I don't want to say the name because it'll be annoying. It's called Compliance. That movie got in my head like crazy. It really bothered me.
It's very, yeah.
That story is horrible.
He uses the name Officer Milgram, which is a reference to the Milgram experiments.
This is starting to ring a bell, him doing
this. Which was all about trying to test people's like reaction to authority. So like it was like, press this button, you'll give a puppy a shock.
Right.
And because it's a scientist in a lab coat who you should trust, he must know what he's doing.
Right.
I guess
there must
be a
reason.
Hit the button, even when it sounds horrific.
Right.
And so the whole point is that Robin Williams trusted authority and resulted in the death of his wife and son during labor.
I did see this.
And so now he's punishing people for responding to authority.
Yeah.
And it all culminates when he kidnaps, I forget her name.
Is it Olivia Benson?
Yes.
Okay.
And he has Elliot Stapler.
Stabler,
played by Chris Maloney.
Yes.
And he's telling him to push the button to hurt Liv.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, Robin Williams is going to do it, so you better do it. I'm telling you to do it. And every time he doesn't do it, Robin Williams pushes a button, and you hear her screaming. And Chris Maloney's like, no!
Yeah.
And then Robin Williams is screaming like, I am an authority! Push the button! And he's saying, push the button. He says that.
Yeah.
And then Chris Maloney refuses to, and Robin Williams goes, you're a good man. You don't bow to authority. Okay.
Oh. Like Jigsaw? He's got like a grudging respect?
Yes.
Yeah.
He was never hurting her. He goes, I hadn't watched the full episode, so this was a surprise. I'll just present it to you the way it was presented to me. He goes, there are no bombs here.
Like, what?
Out of context of the episode.
Right.
I'm sure they were set up, but he's like, there are no bombs.
He's like, okay.
Okay.
Were they on the table?
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
And he goes, this is a garage door opener.
Uh-huh.
She was never in any danger.
Yeah.
You're a good man.
Yeah.
Elliot Stabler. For avoiding authority. I wish I was more like you. You're a better man than me.
So what would have happened if Elliot was like doing it? I guess he would have just been hurting her.
I guess he would have ended up hurting her.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you know there's an episode of I don't think it's SVU. I think it might be Law and Order Original Flavor that Michael Ian Black is in.
I did not know that.
He plays very briefly somebody they go to question. I think that he is using like a Puerto Rican accent, if I remember correctly.
Oh,
I don't totally remember, but that's in my head, and I don't know why it would be if that wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
He plays like a drug dealer or something that they go to interview. So he's like sitting on like a bench in Central Park, just like,
oh, like, that's awesome.
A bad boy.
I would love to see that. You know, Michael Showalter's a bad boy in M. Night Shyamalan's Signs.
Yes, I do.
He's got a little scruff.
Yep.
He's a tough guy.
That's right.
Wonderful. All right, now we move on to, I have him in here. It's not really out yet, but it was fun. Bill Hader is going to in the next It movie as
Man,
the grown-up.
I love Bill Hader.
That's why he's in here, quite frankly. It's just because I love him.
Yep.
He's going to be Richie Tozier.
Yes.
The grown-up wisecracking kid.
Almost single-handedly making me want to watch it.
Yeah.
I really love him. I love Barry. If you guys haven't watched Barry on HBO yet, get on it.
Now, the trailer for It is coming out. If you're listening to this on Friday, it's already out. As of this recording, we have not seen it. So all my information is for the 1990 TV series, miniseries thing. Here are some taglines for It. Your every fear, all in one deadly enemy. From the chilling, from the king of terror, a chilling new dimension in horror. And finally, the master of horror unleashes everything you were never, ever afraid of.
Wait.
Screw that one up.
What is it? The Master of Horror unleashes everything you were ever afraid of?
Yeah.
You were ever afraid of is a weird way to put that.
Yeah, it's really weird.
I mean to critique all these things, but...
I wrote The Master of Horror unleashes everything you were never afraid of.
Oh!
That's nice.
I'd be happy to watch that.
That's a benevolent move.
Yeah.
From The Master of Horror.
I'll take it.
So, the original Richie Tozier was played by Harry Anderson.
Yep.
He plays him as a late night TV host in the book. He's a DJ.
Mm-hmm.
Here's his standout line. I just flew in from L.A., and boy, is my tail section tired. We're hot tonight. It's great to be back here in Derry, breathing in that old Derry air.
That is a good joke.
Eddie, get all their names. I want to put them on my Christmas mailer. No, you know Denborough there? Let's put him on my Norman mailer. And then he puts Eddie in a headlock.
Holy macaroni. Sweet Norman mailer joke.
So I can't wait to see Bill Hader do that.
I know.
Standout moment is there's a balloon scene where... Pennywise starts pretending he's prank calling people,
uh-huh.
but he's not even holding a phone. So he goes, "Do you have Prince Albert in a can? We better let the poor feller out." I don't know, whatever. Okay. Not great. You know,
not great.
I think I'm going to skip this one. It's Will Smith in I Am Legend. He's not really a comedian. He's like from a
comedic TV show.
Yeah.
I think that counts.
All right, let's see how fast I can do this. I Am Legend. The premise is he's the last man on Earth. It's sort of, you know, Earthbreak.
Right.
Similar vibe, last person on the planet.
Yeah.
But in I Am Legend, humans have been turned into something else.
Yeah.
So they're all sort of like zombie vampire kind of things. They have some intelligence, but not much.
Yeah.
Whatever. He's the last dude around.
Yep.
Taglines. The last man on Earth is not alone.
Okay.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Other tagline, welcome to Earth, population one.
All right, a little dorky, but okay.
Also, I think just to reference him going, welcome to Earth, and punching an alien in the face.
Oh, my God. Right?
In Independence Day?
You might be right.
Yeah. He plays Robert Neville. Here's his standout line that I picked.
Mm-hmm.
Day 1001.
I've got to get me one of these.
I got me one of those.
Yeah.
We came in close contact with a hive today. Blood tests confirm that I remain immune to both the airborne and contact strains. Canines remain immune to airborne strain only. The vaccine trials continue. I'm still unable to transfer my immunity to infected hosts. The Crippen virus is elegant.
What? What was this guy's job?
I just thank God that...
He must have been a scientist or something, right?
A hematologist is the last man on Earth.
Holy
crap. I don't remember. I only saw the movie once.
Yeah.
I do not remember a scene where he tries to give a monster a blood transfusion from himself.
Nor I. I think you and I probably remember one scene quite well, specifically.
Yoah.
The night that we watched this movie, which was, you know, a long time ago, we were putting down our family dog the next day
because
she was just older and she wasn't well or whatever. So we were like,
it was like a planned thing.
Yeah,
it was sad, but we were trying to make the best of it.
Yeah.
We were like spending one last evening with her.
Right. We like made her a burger and we were hanging out with her. We're all hanging out together as a family. And we decided to hang out and watch a movie.
And we're going
to
make a photo album of her as we watch the movie. We've always loved horror. So why not I Am Legend?
Why not? So we're watching I Am Legend and we're all like, you know, kind of sad, and starts to become clearer and clearer that he's going to have to just shoot his dog and put it down. Like, it started to feel like it. I remember us just being like, it's no, right? Like, not.
There's no way they're going
right
to show
now,
it.
And, right? And they totally showed it and everything. And we were like, oh my God.
He's like, Will Smith. Will Smith is one of the most like skilled criers.
Yeah. Oh my God.
On
he
the
really
planet.
Is. Yeah.
Seeing Will Smith tear up, even though I've seen it 1,000 times, it's not special.
He's a great actor.
It makes me, it's very emotional to see Will Smith crying. He's like in a bathtub with his dog.
It was brutal.
It's
the
like,
timing was unbelievable.
It's severely uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And we were just like, we were sitting there like, what have we done to
ourselves?
We
were like, you gotta be kidding me. We're at least acknowledging it out loud and not just sitting it. We were like, oh God, are you kidding me right now? How do we pick a movie where this happens?
Why did we do this to ourselves?
However,
I did pick a different thing as the standout moment.
Yeah.
There's a moment in the movie where Robert Neville begs a mannequin to say hello to him.
What is this movie? God, I don't remember this at all.
He goes, say hello to me, please.
Yeah. He says
say
that?
Hello to me.
Oh God, yes, that's sad.
Does. That's sad. That's insane
it's
to
insane,
me.
It's insane, but that's like
it's so
broad. Pathetic.
It's pathetic in a way where I'm like, No. I would believe it if there was like a quiet scene where he had like a mannequin in the room or something for some reason. Like in a one day in like a mad fit in a moment of weakness, he brought a mannequin home.
Yeah.
So that it feels like there's someone else. To literally talk to it is so broad. You're entering comedy.
Yeah.
But it wasn't played for comedy, so it just plays as like maudlin.
Just like over the top.
Yeah. It's just a little. The word cringe has become very cringy for me recently.
Yeah, but I know. Yeah.
Very
it does sound cringy.
Yeah. All right, John Goodman, also a little bit of a cheat.
Ooh, yeah.
Also, this is technically a horror movie, but it's also a comedy. I specifically avoided like Bill Murray in Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I think
he's a classically trained actor. He is a comedian. Mm-hmm. Ghostbusters is primarily comedy, primarily but played for
laughs. Talking about like comedic actors who are known for comedic things doing this, it still works.
Okay, fair enough. So John Goodman was in Arachnophobia.
Yeah.
In 1990.
Oh, that wasn't even what I was thinking of.
Oh, what
I've
were
never
you
seen
of?
Arachnophobia.
Oh my gosh, you were thinking of 10 Cloverfield Lane, weren't you?
I was thinking of 10 Cloverfield Lane and Red State.
Red State?
Isn't he in Red State?
Yeah, you're right. He's a detective in Red State.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, yes, you are 100% right. Red State, Red State's like a very paranoia kind of movie.
Yeah. You know what I realized? Also, Adam Scott was in Krampus.
I know, but again, like Krampus.
I haven't seen it before. That's more of a comedy?
I think so. Okay. I've not seen it before either. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If it was generally meant to be a comedy, I typically avoided it.
Yes.
Arachnophobia,
I
picked. I
wasn't sure what the deal was with Krampus.
There are like light Spielbergian type touches.
Liz Sauer of Ghosts and the Burbs told me that I should watch Arachnophobia.
Arachnophobia is great.
I told her I was going to do it that weekend, whatever it was, weeks ago, and I didn't do it.
You didn't do
it? Liz, babe. Sorry.
It's really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That's the reason it's on the list. I watched it a lot growing up, and it makes your skin crawl.
Yeah.
It's really effective at selling like the ick of spiders.
Don't care for spiders.
Premise of the movie is Jeff Daniels is a small town doctor.
Yeah.
He has arachnophobia. Mm-hmm. Also, a spider came over on a shipment of bananas, breeded with...
A nightmare.
I know. Breeded with a... Yeah, this is like two...
It's like my worst... case scenario.
Yeah, it's the opposite of like, you got your peanut butter in my chocolate.
Yeah,
you got your chocolate in my peanut. You got your spiders in my banana.
Well,
you got your bananas in my spider.
I don't like any of it.
So the spider mates with a spider here in America, and they create offspring, like thousands of little baby spiders.
Oh, God, sounds so gross.
And Jeff Daniels has to kill the main spider. And so John Goodman shows up playing Delbert McClintock.
Ooh, McClintock. Wow.
The Exterminator.
Wowee.
Now, he is definitely... It's a comedic role, but he's like one of those blowhards. He's very Dwight Schrute.
Wait, quick. It's John Goodman, not John Candy in that?
John Goodman.
Oh, I totally thought John Candy was in Arachnophobia.
No.
I didn't realize that.
John Goodman is terrific in it.
Huh, yeah.
I didn't read the taglines.
Yeah.
The suspense of Alien, the excitement of Jaws, the fun of Back to the Future.
The teeniness of spiders.
I think it's actually a decent sales point. You'd have to watch it to confirm, but it's like, it's if I remember it properly, we played on
Comparing
Comedy Central quite a bit.
Things are, you know, it helps, honestly.
Eight legs, two fangs, and an attitude.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Here's John Goodman's standout lines. I picked a couple.
Yeah.
He's introduced to Jeff Daniels by the mayor or the sheriff or something. Now, Jeff Daniels is a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
He's a damn doctor. He introduces himself, John Goodman, by going, Delbert McClintock, infestation management. Always nice to meet a colleague.
That's a really funny thing
Which is
to
great.
Say.
He says, I will hunt down the alleged arachnid and spritz him to kingdom come. And then later.
I got
to
tell you, these lines do make me want to watch.
Oh, it's a great movie.
Yeah.
He steps on a spider and it's overly gross. It's like, you know, he lifts up his shoe and it's like sticky, like he's stepping gum almost.
Yeah.
But he goes, a dog starts barking at him and he responds to the dog by going, that's right. I'm bad. The standout moment I gave him was inspecting a barn.
Yeah.
For the spiders. It's just like, and then he has a shootout with a spider where he like wields his little spritzy spray.
I feel like I can see him doing that.
It's really, really
fun. I really want to see this movie.
It's great. I would love to rewatch it.
Yeah.
Dane Cook and Mr. Brooks. Just watched this one recently.
Just watched it.
That's right.
Yep.
Tagline for Mr. Brooks.
He does a great job.
Kev Costner is a serial killer trying to keep it all under wraps. Taglines. Sometimes the man who has everything to hide.
Oh.
Je suis un serial killer. Arrêtez moi. Which translates to, I am a serial killer. Stop me.
Oh my God.
To the point.
Yeah.
A crime only as perfect as the mind behind it.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. In the movie, Dane Cook spots Kevin Costner as he's killing people, and instead of like wanting to turn him into the authorities, or instead of really wanting to blackmail him, that's part of it.
Yeah.
More what it is that Dane Cook is a freaky deaky peeping Tom, and he has realized through watching Mr. Brooks murder people that would be more fun.
Right.
And so what he's doing is actually trying to convince Mr. Brooks to let him come along for the next hit. Mm-hmm. He wants to kill somebody.
Yeah.
If you just do this for me, I won't tell anybody who you are. He actually, I think, does a really good job, as you just said.
Yeah, he's good.
He's really freak. I feel like he goes for it in a way. The fact that he was, I think even at the time, viewed as annoying plays into the character.
Right.
It's a surprisingly effective performance. It's almost weird that he did not do more.
I know, he's good in it.
Standout line. I know you're the thumbprint killer. You've done this before. What I want is for you to take me with you the next time you kill someone. And I'd like that to be soon.
I like that.
I'd like that to be soon. Yeah. It's really
I know.
Commanding.
It's really good.
Yeah. For standout moment, I just wrote puddle.
It was a standout moment.
Let's just say Susie the doll has better habits than Dane Cook. Okay.
She's got nothing on Dane Cook, or vice versa.
Paul Rudd.
Yeah, yep.
Paul Rudd was in Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers in 1995. This is the same year that he would later break with Clueless.
Yeah, big year.
Yep. He plays Tommy Doyle.
Mm-hmm.
The premise is that it's 6 years since Michael Myers last terrorized Haddonfield. Not even since the first one, since the last time he did it.
Yeah.
Here's what it... Okay. He returns there in pursuit of his niece, Jamie Lloyd, who has escaped with her newborn child, for which Michael and a mysterious cult have sinister plans.
Mm-hmm.
Taglines. There are a lot.
Yeah.
Six times the terror. Six times the fear. Six times the thrills.
Wow.
True terror never dies. The only thing more terrifying than how it started is how it ends.
Mm.
Terror never rests in peace. Everyone knows his name. Now everyone will know the truth. This might be my favorite one. One has tracked his murderous past. The other is a student of the black arts.
Whoa!
On Friday, September 29th, a mystery will be revealed.
That's definitely the best one.
Oops!
Nice and tight.
Just noticed I screwed up the movie, boss. Screwed up the movie again. Oops. Oh, I did it again.
I'm such a dope.
Also, Haddonfield is ready to celebrate Halloween. So is Michael Myers. Standout line from Paul Rudd in this movie. He's supposed to be sort of taking over the like hunting Michael Myers thing from Dr. Loomis.
I've actually never seen this one.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
And he's bad in it.
Really?
And I really like Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
It's not his fault.
What are you going to do?
Yeah. I was only 8 years old when I saw him, but I was one of the lucky ones. I survived. Plays a little boy from Halloween 1. If there's one thing I know, you can't control evil. You can't lock it up, burn it, and bury it, and pray that it dies, but it never will.
What?
It just rests a while. You can lock your doors, say your prayers, but the evil is out there, waiting. And maybe... just maybe, it's closer than you think.
Okay, does he study the black arts? Is that this guy's deal? Is he the one who does that?
Yeah, I don't know
what what's his background that he's got? You know what I mean? Like, he's just Tommy Doyle grown up, but he talks like that?
Yeah, he's just super intense.
Like, why does he know all that? If there's one thing he knows, it's all that? What's happened in his life?
Since the events of Halloween 1, I haven't learned anything additional.
Yeah. Well, even non-literally, just like, why is this guy that intense?
I only know one thing.
Yeah. I mean, obviously he's been through trauma and everything, but there's, I don't know, there's just like a whole lot of heft behind that line.
Sure, he can't take her easy.
Yeah, yeah.
For a notable moment, I just wrote, I don't know. I've seen this movie like 5 times. All right, moving on. John Krasinski in A Quiet Place. There are monsters. They're aliens or something. Are they aliens?
I don't know. I don't know if we know.
You can't make a sound.
Maybe we do. I'm not sure.
It'll come and eat you. It'll come and kill you.
Maybe there are aliens.
Taglines are pretty good. This is now we're in like the modern era, so everything's very prestige and like polished and figured out. If they hear you, they hunt you.
Mm-hmm. Good. Solid. Tight.
This one's not that great, but I get it. Mm-hmm. Rule number one, don't make a sound. Rule number two, never leave the path. Rule number three, red means run.
Okay, it's long, but it's good. Yeah.
And then finally, silence.
I wish they were like, number three, follow rule number one.
Yeah.
Whatever.
See rule number one.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was looking for.
Rinse, repeat.
Yeah.
Silence is survival.
Good.
It's also good.
Yeah.
Standout line.
Is it this?
Oh, man. I forgot about this. I was going to post a thing. I was going to do an Instagram Live the other day and then just act. You know, it's 2019. This movie was made a year ago.
Yeah.
Probably 2 years ago. Uh-huh. I was going to just go, Will Rogers auditioning for the role of dad in A Quiet Place, and then just do the finger.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm Will Rogers. That was my audition. Yeah. Anyway, the standout line from John Krasinski.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, he plays... I know his character's name, but... Oh, Lee Abbott.
Okay.
Who I called the constant father. He's really a dad in that movie.
Yeah, oh, he's dadding real hard.
Anyway, his standout...
Yeah, do we know their names in the movie? We might. I just don't remember. I wonder if we don't, because...
I have Lee Abbott here. Yeah, I don't know if they say it.
I know. I'm just wondering if they ever say it, or if it's just kind of like, you know, we know because of stuff after.
Yeah. I don't know. His standout line I wrote down is, too noisy in sign language.
That's a good standout line.
Too noisy. Too noisy.
Yeah. Right. Too noisy.
We're getting toward the finish line, but this is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
This is one of my absolute favorites. So Scream came out.
Uh-huh.
And then there were a million copycats.
Yep.
One of which was The Faculty.
Yes.
Starring a bunch of people, Clea DuVall, Josh Hartnett.
Mm-hmm.
It was about, I'll read you the tagline before I'll say anything else, because this one's near and dear to my heart.
Yeah.
These six students are about to discover their teachers really are from another planet. Elijah Wood is in it as like the dork that knows all the pop culture stuff, because that had to.
Yeah, you have to have one of those then.
Yeah, I think this was flat out written by Kevin Williamson.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So in the movie, all these, this ragtag group of kids, it's very Breakfast Club too. There's like one of every type. Josh Hartnett's the bad boy, sells drugs.
Mm-hmm.
They find out that their teachers have been like essentially possessed by space alien parasite things that like take over their bodies.
Yeah.
They're all working together. There's almost like a hive mind-ish kind of a thing going on with them.
Yeah.
And what they want is to convert all the humans on the planet. Mm-hmm. So they have to try to escape them.
Yeah.
Now here's where a comedian comes in.
Yep.
This is stunning. The scene is wonderful. You should all look it up. Mm-hmm. If you've never seen it before, you're going to love it.
Yeah.
Jon Stewart.
Yeah.
From The Daily Show is in The Faculty playing Mr. Furlong, the science teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we already looked this one up.
Yeah.
Everybody else, like Paul Rudd, hadn't quite broken yet.
Right.
Makes sense. Adam Scott hadn't broken yet. Mm-hmm. Jon Stewart, I just think of as like,
yeah,
he's been around forever.
Totally.
Doing amazing things. So I looked up to see at what point in his career this happened.
Mm-hmm.
He would not become Jon Stewart on The Daily Show for another year.
Yeah.
This predates that.
Yeah.
This comes after he had a very popular show on MTV in the 90s, the Jon Stewart Show.
Mm-hmm.
He even hosted some sort of a BBC talk show that was called something along the lines of Where Is Elvis Now?
Oh, I don't know about that.
It was very strange. I had no awareness of it.
Yeah.
That got canceled. He almost was picked to be the third in a series of late night stuff. It was going to be David Letterman followed by Tom Snyder followed by Jon Stewart, but he turned that down.
Yep.
And then he popped up here.
Mm-hmm.
In The Faculty, where the following happens. They now know that he is an alien.
Yeah.
And so they try to leave the room coyly.
Mm-hmm.
But almost like the Terminator, he turns and grabs the person who's trying to leave by the throat.
Yeah.
And then looks at Josh Hartnett and says, "This is for the best, Zeke."
Mm-hmm.
That's the standout line I've got
really
for him.
Good standout line.
Mr. Furlong had claimed that an alien specimen they found, he sent away to be studied, but it's obvious that's not the case. Josh Hartnett grabs one of those paper cutter things.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
And he rips the blade off of it.
Yeah.
Which I think was in the trailer.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And he swings it on Jon Stewart.
Yeah.
Chops Jon Stewart's fingers off.
Yeah.
The fingers land and then crawl around. Jon Stewart screams and then kind of tackles Josh Hartnett and starts barfing slugs onto him.
Yeah.
Like Ron Weasley.
I only vaguely remember.
And then Josh Hartnett grabs, he's got these pens that have drugs in them.
Oh, yeah.
He's selling them like drugs. They're those like little disposable pen things.
Yeah, yeah.
He takes the ink cartridge out and fills them up with white powder.
Right.
I think it turns out those are caffeine pills, like ground up caffeine pills. And he sells them as drugs.
Yeah.
He's able to reach one of those and he stabs it into Jon Stewart's eye.
Yeah.
So now you've got Jon Stewart with his fingers cut off with gross alien tendrils coming out.
Yeah.
And his eye has a pen jammed in it. It's all gross looking.
Yeah.
And he stands up and he's going like, actually, I don't think his mouth ever opens. He's just going like,
yeah.
There's really weird.
God.
Falls over, wiggles around, and dies.
Yeah.
Jon Stewart's how they learn that the alien weakness is dehydration.
Yeah, yeah. Oh.
They require moisture, water, whatever, and the caffeine.
The caffeine dehydrated him.
Yeah.
Been there.
Yeah.
But that's awesome.
It is like, you know, like a violent scene.
Yeah.
With like one of America's favorite funny men.
Right.
It's
which is sweet.
It's awesome.
Yeah. That movie was sweet. Yeah.
And then I think we're at the final big boy. This is the end. Yeah, this is the last person that I have to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Is one of the big guns. You brought him up to me earlier today.
Yep.
Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Jim.
Let's do it.
Carrey.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to start with?
Whatever you have.
Let's start with the cable guy.
Okay.
So in The Cable Guy, Jim Carrey is stalking Ferris Bueller.
Matthew Broderick.
Yes, that's right. The premise is a lonely and mentally disturbed cable guy raised on television just wants a new friend, but his target, a designer, rejects him with bad consequences.
Mm-hmm.
His character is only known as The Cable Guy, but he also gives out fake names.
Yeah.
Jim Carrey, as The Cable Guy, says that his name is Chip Douglas,
mm-hmm.
Larry Tate, and at the very end, Ricky Ricardo.
Yeah. I don't remember Cable Guy very well. I've seen it before, but it's not like, I don't have it imprinted.
It's like a very notoriously bad movie. It's considered to be, it's directed by Ben Stiller. It's super dark.
Yeah.
This was like, Jim Carrey was specifically known at this time as like, old rubber face, funny man, light and fun for the kids.
Goofus.
Yeah. This movie is super dark.
Yeah.
Taglines. Once you let him into your house, you'll never get him out of your life.
Okay.
Are you ready to get wired? He came, he saw, he tormented.
Whoa. That's insane.
Yeah, it's a weird one. Stephen Kovacs needed his cable hooked up. The cable guy needed a friend. But is free cable worth all this?
Wow.
There's no such thing as free cable. Once you're hooked, you're his. And finally, for Stephen Kovacs, the price of cable is about to go up.
Okay. That and there's no free cable are pretty good.
I like the price of cable is about to go up. All right.
It's really funny.
Standout lines.
Mm-hmm.
You were never there for me, were you, mother? You expected Mike and Carol Brady to raise me. I'm the bastard son of Claire Huxtable. I am the lost Cunningham. I learned the facts of life from watching the facts of life.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
Like, regrets everything. It's very twisted and sad.
Yeah.
And I can be your best friend or your worst enemy. You seem to prefer the latter.
That's a good line.
Which is a great line.
That's
standout
very good.
Standout moment is Ferris Bueller has a nightmare that the cable guy is chasing after him.
Mm-hmm.
And the hallways become elongated and Jim Carrey's eyes are glowing green.
Yeah.
And he's doing like funny running stuff after him. But it's actually like in this context, the way it's shot.
Yeah, it's unnerving, I'm sure. It's like scary.
It's insanely unnerving.
Yeah, yeah.
The cable guy is actually like a really like brutal story of like mental illness and not being able to escape somewhere.
Right. See, I just think of it as like a really upsetting movie.
Yes, it's insanely upsetting.
Yeah.
It's far more upsetting than the other movie he did, which was intended to be scary.
Right.
Called The Number 23.
That one's a real woofer.
Where he plays Walter Sparrow.
Mm-hmm.
Premise is Walter Sparrow is obsessed with a book called The Number 3, which is written by someone named, do you know the name?
No, I don't remember.
Topsy Kretz.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Holy crap. Yikes.
The book is about Detective Fingerling.
Okay.
Who wants to kill a character called the Suicide Blonde.
Uh-huh.
Jim Carrey believes the book is a confession about a murder, and he also believes it's about him. He thinks it has something to do with him.
Have you seen this before?
You and I watched it together.
Oh, yeah, because I know I've seen it. Yeah.
He also starts seeing the number 23 everywhere. It's one of those movies where it's like, did you notice the hotel?
Yeah.
H, T, and L. If you add those up, whatever.
Yeah.
Taglines. The truth will find you. First, it takes hold of your mind. Then it takes hold of your life. And a number is just a number.
Until it's not.
Or is it?
Okay.
So... All right. I'm actually really glad that we're into spoilers.
Uh-huh.
Let me just say his notable lines, then I'm going to talk to you about the movie for a couple of seconds. Of course, time is just a counting system, numbers with meaning attached to them. A week ago, the only thing I thought was out of the ordinary was that it was my birthday.
And now...
No, it's not.
Wait, was that it?
That was it. A week ago, the only thing I thought was out of the ordinary was that it was my birthday. So
I thought you were saying, and now, blah, 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 blah.
No, that's it. I don't know what happens next. It's so weird.
Oh, my God.
And I just have this line. It's completely removed from context, obviously. They all were. But I guess he's talking about someone. It's just the fact to me is just that this conveys so little.
Uh-huh.
It's so absurd. Even the color of his tie betrays him.
Oh, my God.
It's like really lofty dialogue. You know, like it's all supposed to be so deep and meaningful. So
Youch.
Jim Carrey is obsessed with the number 23, a book written by Topsy Kretz. And he thinks that it is a confession to a murder. So he starts going to therapy. He's seeing the number 23 everywhere. He's got a wife and son.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to therapy to try to figure out what's going on with him. He thinks he's been infected by the book, basically.
Yeah.
His therapist tells him to figure out what's going on with him, he should track down the author of the book.
Uh-huh.
Just like not
it's
something
pretty,
that...
It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah. By the book tactic. Therapy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
to like feed into it. And be like,
it's Virginia Madsen, right?
Oh, I have no idea.
Yeah.
But so he's trying to track down who Topsy Kretz is.
Uh-huh. It's him, right? Or something?
Yeah, it's him.
Yeah.
So what happened is...
I remember there being some sort of like... memory or reality where he's like a shirtless bad boy with like eyeliner.
In the story of the book, Detective Fingerling has like tattoos all going down his arm and plays the saxophone.
Oh my God.
There's actually, quite frankly, there's a photograph of Jim Carrey holding a saxophone as Detective Fingerling, as this like alt version self.
Yeah.
And his face is so, like the makeup and the lighting are so aggressive.
Yeah.
It accentuates every line in his face.
Mm-hmm.
His hair is like, you know, like greasy. It looks like he's been through a lot.
Been through it.
And the fact of the matter is Jim Carrey has a very expressive face.
Right.
When you see Jim Carrey contorting his features into looking like, you know, tortured and insane, it's really effective.
Oh, yeah.
Looking at a photograph of him, I would have been like, I want to see this movie. It's just a shame the movie is so terrible.
Such a dog. Yeah.
So the idea is the book is a confession to a murder.
Uh-huh.
Jim Carrey feels like it's also about him.
Topsy Kretz.
He starts to think his wife... is Topsy Kretz.
Okay.
I read a bunch of scenes. I forgot what happens in the movie from watching it, so I read a bunch of the dialogue. There's a scene where he's like, say it. Say who you are. Say you are Topsy Kretz. Say it. It's like...
she doesn't know what you're talking about, dude.
Yeah. And she has like a knife in her bag, and he's like, what do you have that for? Who are you? What is that for? You're going to kill someone else?
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm trying to protect ourselves from whoever we might find. She's like trying to be in the investigation with
him. Yeah.
And he goes, tell me who wrote the book. I know you know. Tell me who wrote the book. And she goes, it was you.
Yeah.
It's like, what? What? Everything I knew is, it's all upside down. And so he remembers the following.
Yeah.
He was Topsy Kretz.
Uh-huh.
I wish I could just end it right there. Yeah. He had a girlfriend and he killed her.
Uh-huh.
And then somebody else got framed for the murder.
Yeah.
He didn't intentionally frame the person for the murder. He like killed her and then somebody came in and like,
touched
the knife.
Yeah, he like kind of got away with it. Yeah.
And it implicated him in the crime. He got taken away.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Jim Carrey visited that guy in jail, and the guy who went away for the murder that Jim Carrey committed says to Jim Carrey, he's like, I think there's more to this story than you know. Which is like, well, wait. Well, I'm sure there's other context if you actually watched the movie that smoothed this out. Yeah. But it really made it sound like the guy in jail for the murder was also trying to keep a secret from Jim Carrey that he was the killer.
Yeah, right. He was aware that this is the killer, and yet he's not like freaking out at him or something. He's like going along with this whole thing. Did he press his nipple against the glass with that guy the same way he did in The Cable Guy?
It is sloppitudinal. It is this movie. Anyway,
I remember being terrible. I think I remember Virginia Madsen being in it also because I just remember weird things like that. But I feel like, remember that movie Sideways that was like a real big deal about like vineyards and Paul Giamatti's in it and stuff? And people loved it.
Yeah.
She was in that. And then I think she was in this almost right after because I could be totally wrong and I could not know where this is coming from. But I think I remember being like, you're coming off a real high, like a real stinker.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, this is
what are you going to do?
I know.
But.
Yeah, what's done is done.
Exactly.
It's a pretty stinky movie.
Yeah, it's bad.
So he realizes that he is Topsy Kretz.
Uh-huh.
After he killed his old girlfriend.
Yeah.
And tried to kill himself, and it didn't go right,
mm-hmm.
and instead he got amnesia.
Oh, okay.
So it's like...
So everybody's dancing around him for that reason and just, you know, trying to not upset him or whatever.
I guess.
Yeah.
Did he not know he had gotten an amnesia? I don't know.
Right.
Questions I won't have answered because I'm not going to rewatch the movie.
Yeah.
So maybe they're irritating the people that do know.
Yeah.
But like, it's just like so.
Yeah.
So weak.
I know.
So bad.
I remember thinking it was just, it's not even fun bad. I remember just being like, it sucked.
The cherry on top is directed by Joel Schumacher, famously from Batman and Robin and Batman Forever with Jim Carrey.
They've worked together before.
It's like they tried to team up to do something far more adult and serious and scary, and it all just fell apart.
Yeah.
Which is a shame. Like, I hope that didn't scare Jim Carrey away from doing scary stuff, because I really think that he would be...
Well, you know, this will be annoying to talk about, but I know he was in some movie in maybe 2018 that was like a scary movie that was also supposed to be very terrible.
Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. Let me see if I can find it real quick.
Yeah, I'd be very curious about that. I think that Jim Carrey is a really good actor.
I do too.
And he
I'm
would
always
be,
really rooting for him.
He's one of the, you know, one of the things that I think is implied in all of this is that comedians, people that you are used to seeing bringing life to something and joy and happiness, when that joy and happiness is gone, it's even darker than if it was just some, you know, any other performer.
Yeah.
Seeing Robin Williams play disturbed and upset is especially more weighty than when Al Pacino does it.
Yeah, it's because it's totally incongruous with what you know of them.
Exactly.
It's like even more unnerving.
Yeah.
So he was in a movie called Dark Crimes. It was actually 2016. It was not last year. And it's the plot is a murder investigation of a slain businessman turns to clues found in an author's book about an eerily similar crime.
What?
Weird. Yeah. And it was supposed to be very, very bad.
What's his character's
name? And I think
name?
Kind of offensive or something.
Really?
His character's name, I just saw it before. It's like Taddock? Where'd it go? Yeah, Taddock.
Taddock.
Yeah.
Taddock.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you know what's
it
weird?
It happens in another country. Like, there's like Kozlov, Kasia. Yeah.
You know what's weird that I just thought of? So in the number 23, it's all about a book written by somebody named Topsy Kretz.
Yeah.
In Batman Forever, his name is Enigma.
Can we scramble around the letters of Taddock to make some sort of other wordplay name? No.
I don't know. I'm gonna try to write something and cast Jim Carrey in it where he can play someone named Spooky. The name's Spoo.
Spooky.
The name's Ookie. Spooky.
The name's Airy. Ska-Airy.
Oh my God! Hi, I'm Terry.
Yeah,
terrifying.
Or his name is Ike, and then he has to place his name into something, and he realizes there's a Y and an S on the other side.
Oh!
Everything's coming together.
I like.
And he slowly
yikes.
Backs away from it. Like no.
It couldn't be.
Yeah.
I'm Zoinks.
Weird. Well, I guess we know he has a type when it comes to, you know, scary material.
Hi, I'm Eugene. I'm Eugene Ebers.
Eugene Ebers? So wait. What's happening here?
Close but no cigar, huh?
It's Eugene Ebers, and then do we call him Gene Ebers? Then it's Jeepers? G Ebers? It'd be more like Geepers, I guess. Geepers.
Eepers. Name's Eugene. Eepers. Eepers. I think Eepers alone is just a good last name.
Me too. Eepers is a really good last name.
Eugene Eepers. It's very hard.
It also sounds like a real name from a thing.
It's like spit all over myself.
It sounds like a weird Jim Carrey movie. Eugene Eepers. It fits.
Eugene Eepers.
Like in that sad show that he was just in that I didn't watch. I wouldn't be surprised if you told me that his name. He plays Eugene Eepers.
Yeah.
Child puppeteer who blah, blah, blah. Right. I buy it.
Who has a bad day.
Yeah. No thanks.
Yeah. Nice man, bad life.
Yeah.
No, thank you. I'm good. I've had enough.
I'm going to back away slowly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But there you go. That is a long, short list of a lot of notable comic performers who have appeared in scary stuff or played intense, scary roles where they themselves, I don't know, had to respond to or exude some element of terror.
Yeah.
Much like Jenny Slate in Earthbreak, who is running for her damn life.
Yeah, and killing it.
Oh, absolutely. She's absolutely incredible on this show. Everybody, please go subscribe. We'll have a link in the show notes that you can check out. Follow at EarthbreakPod as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's super fun.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Well, that was there you go.
I actually love seeing comedians in roles like that. I think it's fun.
Yeah.
As long as it feels right or they do a good job or whatever, I like really, really enjoy it.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I really hope in this new era of like Jordan Peele has really, it seems like periodically horror.
Yeah.
You know, there are rises and falls to everything. Mm-hmm. Periodically, horror ends up back in the sewer.
Yeah.
And then somebody comes along and dusts it off and proves
why
horror is a really effective medium worth
paying
more attention to. And right now, Jordan Peele has really set a new tone. And I think a lot of it is around the comedic performer and how extra terrifying
it is. Tim Heidecker was in Us.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I did too until just now.
Boy, he's real weird in it too.
I know.
Yeah. Now I really want to watch Us again.
I know. We were talking about that earlier. I want to, too.
But yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan of that. So.
Me, too. I love it.
There you go. Well, that brings us to the end of another episode of Guide to the Unknown.
Thank you
so much for hanging out with us this week.
Yeah.
If you want more Guide to the Unknown, you can go follow at GTTUpod on all social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Yep.
You can also go to patreon.com/GTTUpod if you would like to give a little something back to us.
Yeah, we super, super appreciate everybody who does that. And if you want to kind of join that club of people who are like acknowledging that they get to enjoy something for free every month, they make it a little bit less free from themselves by thanking us with money, then more power to you, and we super appreciate it.
Absolutely, 100%. Mm-hmm. Speaking of joining clubs, go to facebook.com/groups/GTTUpod so that you can become part of our secret society, talk with other people who listen to or watch this show, share stuff that you've been checking out yourself.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of like really good conversations happening.
Yeah, definitely. It's a cool group to be a part of.
Yeah.
You can also follow us individually online. I'm at Chillin' Kristen on Instagram.
I am at The Myth Traveler.
That's right. And if you're feeling generous, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, whatever podcast app you use, Facebook, any of that. We would super duper appreciate it.
I love seeing what people think of the show.
Yeah, it's really, really nice. And it helps other people like not necessarily find us, although it does kind of help with like showings in, you know, apps and everything like that. But it helps them be like, oh, okay, maybe this is a good show I should listen to.
Yeah.
You know, because they're like, oh, other people like it. So we'd really appreciate it if you did that.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
But we will be back next week for more spooky stuff from around the world.
Yeah.
And until that time comes, we must travel.
Back to the Netherworld, go we. Bye.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.